from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. We are a work in progress when it comes to race and racism. We've made progress, and there are serious, complex injustices, institutional racism, persistent discrimination, cultural distance, fear, and then there is, threaded through our society, a hard nugget of unadulterated, unapologetic racists, Dylan Roof style, who talk of race war and seem madly to mean it. How does all this fit together? How do we move forward? This hour on Point, after Charleston, after the killing and the terror and the mourning, what must be said? What must be done? You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We know. There's been a lot said. There was a lot said just over the last few days. Here are a couple of voices right here. Here was former Arkansas governor, Republican presidential candidate Mike Huckabee on NBC's Meet the Press saying, hey, don't paint everybody with the brush of Dylan Roof.
There's 4.8 million people in South Carolina. I don't think you could say that the presence of one lunatic racist who everybody in this country feels contempt for, and no one is defending, is somehow evidence of the people of South Carolina.
Okay, but look nationally. Something's going on here that doesn't look good. Here's South Carolina Democratic Congressman James Clyburn on Meet the Press yesterday. For him, Dylan Roof was not just one disturbed young man at all, but something, part of something bigger and dangerous.
I have been saying for some time now that there's this rightward drift in the country that I think is going too far. And people get emboldened by all of this. So when you see the resurrection of this, a young man, 21 years old, wearing all of these apartheid things on his shirt, burning the United States flag, certainly you're creating a climate that will allow this kind of thing to happen.
Very reasonable observation. People are frustrated at the same time. Here's a woman holding a poster. This was last week outside the Charleston courthouse as the arraignment of Dylan Roof on 9 counts of murder was going on inside. She identified herself as Sister Solove. You might not agree with her that they don't like us and we don't like them, that the language goes too far. Oh, but anyone can relate to the raw, honest anger and frustration here last week.
I'm mad. I'm pissed. What are we supposed to do with the anger? What do we do? We can't go pray. That's not working. We can't go be a child, 13 years old, playing at the park. That's not going to be, it's not working. What will make a white America happy? What do we have to do? We've been doing this and going through this kumbaya all the time. It's time out for that. They don't like us. We don't like them. That's the truth. Black America is angry.
Let's go to all this. Joining me now from Philadelphia, Anthea Butler. She's a professor of religious studies, University of Pennsylvania. Her piece in the Washington Post op-ed was headlined, "Shooters of Color Are Called Terrorists and Thugs. Why Are White Shooters Called Mentally Ill?" Seen that change maybe over the weekend some. You can find a link to that at our website, onpointradio.org. Anthea Butler. Dr. Butler, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
From Dallas, Texas, we're joined by Bill McKenzie, Pulitzer Prize-winning former columnist with the Dallas Morning News, now editorial director for the George W. Bush Institute. Bill McKenzie, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you, Tom.
And from Durham, North Carolina, Mark Anthony Neal joins us, professor of African and African-American studies at Duke University, author of New Black Man. Dr. Neal, Mark, welcome back to you as well. Thanks for being here today.
How are you doing, Tom? Thank you.
I'm all right. Anthea Butler, over the weekend, where have your thoughts gone on all this? We've seen people pouring into the churches and the streets in their Sunday best in Charleston, everybody talking and thinking about this. You went first to the tag that was put on Dylan Roof. You were saying, well, let's call him a terrorist. I've heard a fair amount of that language being used over this weekend. What matters? What should we be focused on at this point, Anthea?
What we should be focused on is two things. Number one, that racial terror has existed in this country for over 200 years. What Dylan Roof did is not some anomaly of some drug-crazed white man who decided to walk into a church and participate in a Bible study for an hour and then shoot the people that he was in the Bible study with. This is regular, good old American racism, pure and simple. And it's been going on for a long time. I'm a historian. I understand what this is, but it didn't just make me feel any better when it happened. The second thing we probably should be thinking about is how are we going to proceed? We have had, since 2008, an uptick in hate groups arising. We've had people buy more guns because we have a black president. We've had the president called all kinds of names. A congressman yelled out, "You lie," who's from South Carolina, so I have to think that I'm not agreeing with Mike Huckabee one damn bit. The people of South Carolina are not so great, and they helped part of this happen. There's a Confederate flag hanging over higher than the American flag that is at half staff right now for the people who died at Emanuel AME. So I ask you, what do you think I should think right now? I'm a little bit more like that woman who was standing outside who was very angry. This is an old story. I'm tired of the story. I'm tired of teaching and writing about the story. I want to see change. And that's the reason why I wrote that article.
I mean, I completely understand that. If you ask me, I understand that feeling and that vivid response. At the same time, I and maybe you, Anthea Butler, Dr. Butler, don't want to not recognize and or lose the progress that has been made. And this is nowhere near paradise.
But what kind of progress? What we keep talking about. And I don't understand when you say we've made progress. How have we made progress when the president of the United States has been constantly questioned because he is partially a black man?
Mm-hmm.
And so you talk about progress. And this is the kind of talk we're going to hear all week long.
But he is president, madam. Yeah. I mean, he is president.
That's
a pretty big deal. And
it is a pretty big deal, but to some people in this country, like Dylan Roof, that is the end of this country. That's why you had the kind of phrase that he said that all your politicians, the right Republican politicians, have been saying since 2008, take our country back. And so I want to talk about the rhetoric that's happened. That's why I wrote the piece. Mm-hmm. That's why I stayed up all night to write it.
Fair. Mark Anthony Neal, how do you see the point we've come to? You heard James Clyburn say there he's worried about a rightward drift. Are we backsliding in this country on race and race relations? Is that too much to hand to Dylan Roof with his terrible massacre, his terror in the night at the church there? Or is it happening?
Mr. Roof is just symptomatic of what we've seen. And as Professor Butler just said, you know, we're talking about 200 years of anti-black violence that we've seen in this country. We've seen a steady, you know, over the last 100 years of attacks on black churches. So even attacks on black churches aren't something that's unusual and strange in the context of what we've seen here. So we've clearly seen an uptick, right? And on the one hand, we're looking at state-directed violence at black bodies, you know, whether or not we're talking about, you know, Mike Brown and a host of other cases. But then we also see police interactions,
okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you're also seeing it on this interpersonal level. And when you talk about backtracking, you know, backsliding, if you will, in terms of race relations in this country, you know, me sitting down talking to my 12-year-old daughter about 9 people being shot in a church, you know, she knows what happened 50 years ago in 16th Street Baptist Church. And for her, that's supposed to be history, right? We're supposed to be past that kind of
Norman Rockwell painting.
Exactly, right? And, and so I look at this situation. I look at it even here on a campus like Duke, where a few months ago we had a hanging of a noose. And the student who hung the noose was allowed to come back into the community by apologizing, in part by saying that he didn't understand what the symbol was. So how am I to expect that an uneducated young white man from South Carolina can know what Rhodesia was? Right, by just simply perusing the net, but
he seems to have known what it was. But he does seem to have known. He knows that it was a white ruled nation, and that's what he is expressing admiration for.
And I'm looking at this student at Duke who can, I believe, disingenuously say, I have no idea what, you know, a noose means. But for the community to actually accept that apology is even more problematic than the hanging of the noose in the first place.
Bill McKenzie, what are you thinking as all this unfolds before us here? Not just Dylan Roof and the terrible, terrible killing in Charleston last week, but this drumbeat of incidents we've seen now over the last year and more than a year. What is happening here? Were we under an illusion that we had made progress? Did we make it and we're losing it? Are these outliers somehow? How can they be one after another?
Well, I would agree with Dr. Neal. I think you were talking to your daughter about it. I kind of had a similar thought as we're learning about the shooting in Charleston. You think about what happened in Birmingham as being part of our long-ago past, 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. But here we are. We're having an event with worse carnage in 2015 and in 1963. So, you know, clearly deep-seated racism still exists, and there's no question about it, and it is we have no choice, I think, but to get up every day and find opportunities, seek opportunities, work for opportunities to build a society that respects and rewards the talents and abilities of all our people. And I know that sounds awful, you know, lofty, but it's the only way forward I can imagine.
If we haven't done that in those 50 years, Bill.
I do think there has been progress. I like the way you all set the show up. You know, we have had progress. We're a work in progress, I think, is the way you said.
Yes.
And at the same time, we have these deep, complex issues. I don't think Bull Connor-style racism is still accepted in the mainstream of American society. If you look at the elections that have happened in the aftermath of the Voting Rights Act across the South, you know, here in Dallas in 1998, Ron Kirk was elected the first African-American mayor of Dallas with very strong support from African-American and white voters. And across the South, you've seen a lot of elections of African-American leaders. We are better off for that as a society, and I do think that was a function of what happened over the last 50 years.
And Anthea Butler, we did see white people in South Carolina and Charleston pour into the churches alongside African-Americans over this weekend.
Yes, we did. But you need to understand the distinction here. I don't doubt that there are well-meaning, good white people, good white Christians, who are appalled at this. I understand that. But when you have a structural system that continues to do this kind of racial profiling, the kinds of things that are going on with the police in this country, the kinds of issues that we have had, the problem becomes this. I mean, you can talk about progress all you want, but reality is another thing altogether.
Dr. Butler, hold the thought. We'll come back to it right after a short break here. Forgive me. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about race in America and what needs to be said, what needs to be done. After Charleston, what's still wrong and how do we fix it? Anthea Butler is with us from Philadelphia, professor of religious studies at the University of Pennsylvania. Mark Anthony Neal is with us from Durham, North Carolina, professor of African and African American studies at Duke, author of New Black Man. Bill McKenzie is with us, Pulitzer Prize winning former columnist with the Dallas Morning News. He's now editorial director at the George W. Bush Institute, joins us from Dallas. Jon Stewart picked it up on The Daily Show the day after the shooting, said, look, when stuff things like this happen on other fronts, we go crazy. We get out and do things about it. Here's Jon Stewart.
We invaded two countries and spent trillions of dollars and thousands of American lives and now fly unmanned death machines over like five or six different countries, all to keep Americans safe. That's got it. We got to do whatever we can. We'll torture people. We got to do whatever we can to keep Americans safe. Nine people shot in a church. What about that?
And here's Eva Bryant. She was in the Emmanuel AME Church on Sunday, first service in the church since the gunman killed those nine. Talked with NPR on Sunday, calling everyone to action.
We as a people, it doesn't matter whether it's race, ethnic background. We need to come together. And I don't think just packing the church pews is going to be enough. We need to get out in the streets.
Anthea Butler in Philadelphia, we ran into a break there, and you were just coming to yours. So what? So what needs to be said? What needs to be done, madam?
Well, I think one of the first things we need to do is have a frank and honest conversation about race and a confrontation of the kinds of things that happen in the media and in our political system. Right now, we're very polarized. Some of these racialized things have come out in the press. Just yesterday on Meet the Press, Chuck Todd ostensibly ran a piece about gun violence where they basically showed all African-American men, you know, 3 days after nine black people got shot.
Yep.
I mean, that's just basically racial profiling at its finest. It's really a shame that one of the premier shows, Sunday morning shows, had to do something like that. So that's the first thing, is having this honest conversation and realizing that we are a racist nation. There are things that we do. Not everybody's a racist personally, but we won't talk about the structural racism. And I want to make a differentiation between that, because individuals can say all the time that they're not racist, but the structures are racist. You know, Bill, who's in Dallas, talked about election of African-American officials. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, part of the Voting Rights Act has been struck down by our Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. So that's not going to happen anymore. The gerrymandering that's happened so that people can't vote. We have structural issues in this nation that show our racism, and we will not deal with them.
When you talk about structural issues, would you please articulate a few of those? That's kind of a big term.
Yes. First, I just articulated one of them, which was what has happened with the Voting Rights Act. The second is, how do we deal with policing in this country? I don't think I have to be, you know, anybody doesn't have to realize what's happened in Ferguson, what just happened outside of Dallas and McKinsey, where a 14-year-old girl was sat down upon by a policeman. You know,
McKinney,
the choking out of Eric Holder. And then when you see Garner, thank you. When you see Dylan Roof with, you know, a bulletproof vest and getting into a plane, and he was hungry, so he had to go to Burger King. I mean, I just
Baltimore, where the young man was handcuffed, thrown in the back of the truck, and had his neck broken, effectively.
He had his neck broken, and another young man in Baltimore who turned himself in after his mother told him to, and was hit with $500,000 or $1 million bond, and he's 17. I ask you, you know, when you ask me, what should I do? I'm going to turn this back to all the white people in this nation and say, why do you keep asking us what to do when you know that you need to do something? That is the problem.
Mark Anthony, please. Yes.
Yeah, I'd like to pick up there, because, you know, you raised this question to Professor Butler about, you know, seeing all so many whites come out and support this past weekend. And we're thankful for that. But, you know, does that support actually extend now to pushing back against elected officials? I mean, when we're talking about voter suppression in states like South Carolina and North Carolina, what we've seen in both those states, the turning back of the clock, when we see states where there are stand your ground laws, are those same whites going to be willing to push back against their elected officials within that context? When we see the gutting of Black studies and ethnic studies programs in a state like Arizona, and is the way it's being soft-pedaled, the gutting of it here in North Carolina, you know, via folks like Art Pope and at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And so you could have children, young folks, who would go through an educational system, higher education in this country, and never actually have to deal with the reality of what American history is, particularly as it relates to racialized violence against Black bodies and others. And, you know, the Confederate flag in this regard seems like an easy referendum, right? If you want to do something, you know, why not rally around folks to push your politicians to take down that flag? It's just symbolic, and it would just simply be kind of a referendum on what you would be willing to do, but that would be a start in that regard. And let's be clear, you know, when we talk about how folks, this kind of expressions of support for the Black community, had there been nine young Black men, had Dylan actually gone into the hood, and that had been nine young Black men sitting in front of a convenience store listening to Kendrick Lamar and Dylan Roof opened up on them, we would not be seeing this explosion of support for the Black community.
Well, there is something about the sanctity of the sanctuary of the church. I get that. But still, I don't know. Nine, I think people would have paid some attention to that. I want to be clear, Anthony and Mark, we're not just saying, hey, you know, Black guests, tell us what we should know. That's years and years ago. That's not now. But surely we've got to be in conversation together here. You raised the Confederate battle flag. NPR's Morning Edition today had a montage of what Republican candidates, Democrats have said, take it down. Hillary Clinton has said, take it down, and more. Here's Bobby Jindal, Lindsey Graham, Rick Santorum, Mike Huckabee.
Look, we'll let the states decide that.
Well, at the end of the day, it's time for people in South Carolina to revisit that decision would be fine with me, but this is part of who we are.
My opinion is that we should let the people of South Carolina go through the process of making this decision.
Okay. I still feel like it's not an issue for a person running for president.
Okay, not an issue for a person running for president, says Mike Huckabee. Beverly in Watertown, Massachusetts, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
This has been very interesting and disheartening to some extent so far. I appreciate your guest remarks. I have an idea or two about what people who are not Black can do to stem racism.
And are you speaking as a white American, a black American?
Oh, no, I've never been white.
Okay. Just establishing. This isn't television, Beverly. So
right,
me.
I know, and I was going to say that very soon.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's hear it.
Okay, here goes. When was and this is directed to anyone who cares, although I do think, you know, inherently white people are a target audience here. When was the last time you said something to interrupt racism in a situation when it was convenient, inconvenient, uncomfortable, or really scary to do so? And as far as recognizing systemic racism, I have an easy concept.
Okay.
Whenever you, one, is in a room, a meeting at work, a club, a gym, a neighborhood, street, and you look around and you only see white people and you specifically do not see black people, then you need to ask, where are they? Why aren't they here? And what are the powers that be?
Beverly, you seem to be saying, if I may, as an African-American woman, you're calling white people sort of lazy on this front. Despite
exactly. I have that word written down. Lazy and lily-livered.
I appreciate your call very much. Bill McKenzie, what about the critique? I mean,
well, I'm
work in progress, but yes, please.
Yeah, I think she's right. I think she, and I'm sorry, I forgot,
Beverly.
Massachusetts?
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
So I think she's right. I think it is incumbent upon those of us, specifically who are white, if you hear somebody say something or, you know, trying to think of an example, but say something most likely that would not be explicitly racist, but would border and be racially tinged, however, whatever that may be, it's incumbent upon us to and I think she said in uncomfortable ways, we have to speak up. I think that is very important, and I think she's right. And I think also, you know, when you're in settings that it looks like it's all white, then it is – she's exactly right. You know, ask the question, why isn't this a more diverse setting? And I would include in here Hispanics, which in states like Texas and California are, you know, becoming – if not the majority, certainly the largest population centers. I will say, I see this, you know, I'm a parent, forget what my title is.
Yes.
I'm a parent first, and I have 12-year-olds, and we play sports through the city of Dallas. We play them through rec centers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when we play on our team, there are five Latinos, three whites, one African-American. We go into gyms all across the city, and we're playing in diverse settings. I got to tell you, I love that. That didn't happen when I was a kid in the 1960s growing up in Texas.
I mean, that's the
that
complexity
is one way,
here, isn't it? That's the irony or the complexity. That is also a fact.
Right. And so likewise, when we're playing other sports, and you're getting in there, and the cities create those opportunities, and it doesn't happen overnight. And I don't walk in the shoes of Dr. Butler or Dr. Neal. I don't purport to, and I can't begin to think what a situation like Charleston would be like, seen through your eyes.
But Bill,
know is that at community level, we need to kind of be intentional about creating these opportunities.
Let me ask you then, along the lines of Beverly's critique, saying, and she's saying, look, too many white people are lazy and lily-livered when it comes to confronting things. All right, this country elected an African-American president, and then there was an awful lot of resistance. And in those years, we heard this phrase, we have to take our country back. Lots of people said this. If you said, that's racist, they'd say, no, it's not. Is that a place, Bill, where I, as Caucasians, should stand up and say, oh, I'm afraid maybe it is, or not?
Sure. I mean, if they're saying the election of Barack Obama, we need to take our country back, I don't think that – I think that's pretty clear what they're saying.
Well, no, they would say, no, you know, this is about defending a certain kind of free market capitalism. This is about defending a merit-based system. This is about defending
Well, you can have debates about issues, and we should have debates about issues as Democrats and Republicans and moderates and independents and liberals. We should have those debates. That is different, I think, from if I understood what you're saying. Mm-hmm. If somebody is frustrated with the election of Barack Obama or Ron Kirk in Dallas and saying, you know, we need to take our country or city back, well, that to me is pretty explicit what they're talking about. That's different from saying, look, I got a difference with Barack Obama on some economic issues. I think he's a great guy, and there are other issues I agree with him on, but I don't agree with him on economics. Well, that's different.
All right.
We've got to have that flexibility and freedom.
Yep. We're all in this conversation. Anthea Butler, what would you like to see first? Here we are. It's a Monday morning after that terrible week. If we're not
what
just going
to
go
like
in
to
circles.
See first, I would like to see two things, actually. I don't think they can happen simultaneously, mm-hmm. but I think they're related to each other. Number one, I would like to see that Confederate flag come down this week for good. I think the legislature should call it a meeting. They should take that damn flag down. That's one.
Mm-hmm.
The second is I would like to see people really start to lean in on the NRA. And here's why. That the guns and the Confederate flag go together. Those things are not separate. For Dylann Roof, they were seen together as a way to take back America, to save white women from being raped. This is 19th century post-Reconstruction rhetoric that he picked up, that he's saying. As a historian, mm-hmm. I knew exactly what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have an NRA member who basically blames the reverend of the church, who is also a member of the state senate, maybe they should have been armed and everything else. It is time for good people in America to step up and say, this is ridiculous. We have allowed the NRA to usurp every kind of conversation about guns in this country every time we have a mass murder. This is why I wrote the piece, because it's not simply about not calling white men terrorists. It's about calling white men mentally ill so that white men will continue to be able to hold guns in this country. And so when we talk about that,
because this is the outlier. This is the outlier.
This is the lone wolf. How the hell is he a lone wolf when you got his friends on talking about this? And he even found a black friend. Oh, that's great. That'll make it, that'll be good for the defense.
Well, in fairness, the reporting I've seen, his friends were not comfortable with a bunch of the stuff he'd been spouting.
And his folks called
the FBI.
So I have a question for you.
Yes.
Why his friends did not talk to him about this before? Because we have a climate in this country that people are allowed to say these racist things, as your caller said, and nobody confronts them. So if somebody had confronted this young man and said, look, this is not cool. What you are saying is not right. He would have either had to leave those friendships or try to change. And they could have tried to change him. But because we have a lackadaisical attitude about this in the country, he could not even be confronted by his peers because this racism has been taught.
Mark Anthony Neal, if I may, forgive me, Anthony, lackadaisical or too PC? We're always hearing the country's too PC to really talk things through.
I think one of the things that many whites do, when it comes to conversations of race, and it's the same conversation we see often with men around sexual violence and rape. If they accept that I'm not a rapist, or a white person says don't think themselves as a racist, then they won't make that next step to police somebody else, right? That's somebody else's issue.
But we're hearing all the time that we're over-policed. And I must say, I mean, maybe.
Yeah, but where are those narratives coming from, Tom? I mean, this is part of what Professor mm-hmm. Butler was talking about mm-hmm. in her piece.
Mm-hmm.
Dylann Roof sounds perfectly normal if you spend 5 hours a day watching Fox News. They're producing a particular narrative that someone like Dylann Roof finds acceptable, right? Other folks find acceptable. They might not have been, quote unquote, mentally ill, right? But when you talk about, access to guns, mental health issues, and white supremacy, right, you see this kind of explosive moment that we saw in Mother Emanuel last week. And so these narratives are not occurring in a vacuum, right? But they're also not being pressed against, right? And part of it has to do with the fact that, if you are Fox News, you're making money off of these narratives, scaring the hell out of folks, right? Making them fearful of black bodies, mm-hmm. making them think that the president of the United States is some radical socialist Marxist, right? Those narratives are being produced because they're making a particular news outlet money, and that's fine, right? Freedom of speech. But then we have these middle of the road entities that aren't even pushing back against what they're seeing as these problematic narratives. Which is why we shout out and give a lot of love to someone like Jon Stewart, who said it plain.
Hi, Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about race in America and what needs to be said, what needs to be done after Charleston. Anthea Butler is with us from University of Pennsylvania. Mark Anthony Neal from Duke is here. Bill McKenzie is here from Dallas. Here was President Obama on Mark Maron's WTF podcast. This was released just today, talking about the importance of taking action to enhance, he said, gun safety laws.
This is unique to our country. There's no other advanced nation on earth that tolerates multiple shootings on a regular basis and considers it normal. And to some degree, that's what's happened in this country. It's become something that we expect.
President Obama saying, come on, we can't live with this status quo. Others want that Confederate battle flag down on the grounds of the state capitol in South Carolina. Interesting, today you've got Tennessee Republican U.S. Senator Bob Corker joining that crew on Friday, saying, take it down, it's time for it to come down. Lindsey Graham, Republican South Carolina senator and presidential candidate, talked to CNN about all that on Friday, and it didn't go that far.
This is part of who we are. The flag represents to some people a civil war, and that was the symbol of one side. To others, it's a racist symbol, and it's been used by people. It's been used in a racist way. But the problems we have in South Carolina throughout the world are not because of a movie or a symbol. It's because of what's in people's heart.
Not because the problems are not because of movies or symbols, but because of what's in people's hearts. Of course, those things can get intertwined pretty well. Thomas in Barnwell County, South Carolina. Thomas, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Let me give one little piece. I'm a white male, 67 years old.
All right.
And my family has been in South Carolina for close to 300 years.
Okay.
I voted for Barack Obama, and I would vote for some other people. I do not look at a person's skin color as a reason to vote or do anything with them.
Okay.
We do have a race problem, but sometimes that race problem goes two ways. I have seen just as much racism with the African-American group as I've ever seen anywhere else.
What form would that take, Thomas? May I ask you, when you say you've seen African-American racism just as much as from anybody else, what does that look like?
Well, let me see. I was in Florida, down around Miami. I used to escort trucks all over the country.
Okay.
And I went through a Wendy's. I will even say that.
Yep.
And there was this young African-American lady there, and then there was this Oriental family in front of us.
Okay.
And they asked for a tray. She said they didn't have any. They asked for a bag. They didn't have any. They didn't even have straws for this family. But yet when an African-American family followed them, the tray appeared, the bag appeared, and the straws appeared.
Thomas, I take it as an anecdote, as a story, and it's worth thinking about. What about the battle flag in South Carolina? Should it come down?
It should come down. It's just a piece of cloth. It is nothing more than just a piece of cloth with red and white color in it. It's just a cloth.
A lot of history behind it, but I'm prepared to hear you and take you straight on that, and I appreciate your call. Anthea Butler, there's a South Carolina caller who says, look, let's not paint with a broad brush about who's racist and who's not, and he's ready to take the flag down, and he's ready to vote for Barack Obama. Does that complicate your view of the world?
No, it doesn't. Not at all. I thank Thomas for calling in and giving his comments, but it doesn't complicate my view of the world at all. And here's why. Once again, that is an individual. We are talking about structural issues. And when I say structural, I'm talking about governmental structures. I'm talking about work situations. I'm talking about employment. I'm talking about our universities. I'm talking about our schools. I'm talking about people in the media. So let me be clear.
Mm-hmm.
What individuals do, I can relate to this. I got plenty of non-racist white friends. You know, this is not the issue. I am talking about structures. What is the structure that allows Dylann Roof to go into a church and shoot 9 black people?
Is that a structure or just an open door? I mean,
No. It's an open door because black people let people come into their churches. If a black person walked into an all-white church at a Bible study on Wednesday night, I guarantee you that somebody would look askance at him.
Yeah, but they wouldn't necessarily pat him down for a weapon. I mean, you could.
No, they might not have, but they certainly would ask some questions.
Well,
he was welcomed into that church. So listen to me very carefully, Tom.
I'm trying to
get this part.
But
I'm putting it
up against my personal experience, and I can't.
I know, but personal experience is not the thing here. You were talking to a historian of African American religious history.
Respect for that.
I am a historian. So personal experience is not going to cut it with me in this particular situation. That is the problem. That is the inherent problem in America. It's about, it's about my feelings. It's about
feelings.
My personal experience.
I didn't say feelings. And
no,
I didn't
no, no. I know
I didn't
you
say
didn't,
feelings.
But I'm using this as an example. Because this is what I teach in a classroom. When I teach this history, my students get upset because they haven't heard it by the time they get to the University of Pennsylvania, an Ivy League school. So I got to spend time breaking down this chattel slavery and the capitalism and the hatred and the greed that happened here in America because of our foundations. That's not to say this is not a great country. What I'm saying is we have to deal with the evil of racism in this country. So feelings are great, but facts are more important.
Let's leave feelings off. I'm not talking feelings, and I know a lot of this history. I mean,
I respect
who's
that.
Trying to push this off the table? What shocks me is that we keep going around in circles on this.
Absolutely.
We're the generation
that
talked about progress. Well, we're trying right here. The whole world is watching as the U.S. grapples with this. I want to bring in a caller right here from Saudi Arabia, Paul in Dharan, Saudi Arabia. Thanks for calling, Paul. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm a superintendent of a group of American and international schools out here in Saudi Arabia.
Okay.
I teach a course on race and culture to high schoolers. I think a key piece missing in this debate is the role of education. These topics are simply not ingrained in our national curriculum.
Why not? It's such a big piece of our history. Why should Anthea have to be teaching this in college?
Because we just operate at the superficial. We need that frank discussion, as Dr. Butler said, but we need it ingrained as required curriculum. We need to address the myth of race as biological and look at what the DNA tells us, that physical differences are superficial. Once you get beyond how to grapple with differences, then we can focus and celebrate culture, which drives our behaviors, and culture is our legacy to the next generation. And then finally, we need to motivate our youth towards action, towards nonviolent action. I find our students, Tom, very open to these concepts and open towards a more cohesive and inclusive community, but they're young and they're naive and perhaps ignorant.
Well,
and this sort of curriculum must be required in every school in our country. It's hard to think of something more relevant or important.
The word there all the way from Saudi Arabia, and I think we're for it. The culture is complicated. Our culture has light and dark in it. Let me take one. Thank you for calling from Saudi Arabia, Paul. One more here from Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Shireen, you're on, and I'll come to you, Mark Anthony Neal. Shireen, you're on.
Hi, Tom. This is such a multi-layered, complex problem that really needs a very nuanced conversation.
Mm-hmm.
We appreciate you having this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when the professor was talking about the systematic racism, I'm going to give you like the possible life cycle of a black male in this country.
Okay.
From third grade, when they have a common fight that little Johnny may have, little Tyrone may have a totally different experience at the principal's office.
And we know that.
And
the numbers are many more expulsions if you're a young African-American.
Right, which leads to more failures, more high school dropouts, which leads to limited job capabilities, which leads to problems, and now they're in the prison system. This is something that's been systematically done on purpose. When it talks about the NRA, when we talk about the gun problem with the NRA, they were fine with open carry until 1967 with Black Panthers, and all of a sudden NRA say no public carry. It's things like that where we feel constantly attacked, where other people can do something very common, but if a black person does it, it's a problem all of a sudden. How are we to feel safe here when we pay our taxes, we contribute as citizens? I have a mom that can't vote because her birth wasn't recorded because she was born in the South. You know, things like that. And it was purposely done because they knew she would be a responsible voter.
Shireen, do you think things are getting worse?
I think people got scared for no reason when President Obama got elected. I heard the narrative of he's going to give black people a bunch of free stuff and he's going to take our guns. And it was so ridiculous. I couldn't believe that that was really the direction of the conversation when it felt like there should have been time for hope. It was so sad to see a news channel dedicate themselves to telling us how bad this president was on his first day. I mean, it was so ridiculous. He can't do the most mundane things without being questioned, without his motivations being questioned. Everything is suspect, and he's only half black. Can we imagine if a full dark-skinned black man, you know, had been elected? I can't even imagine the backlash that would have taken place.
Shireen, I wish you well, and I appreciate your call. Call again. Mark Anthony Neal, you're listening to our callers, to everything here. What are you thinking?
You know, Tom, I'm appreciative of the work that you do. I'm appreciative of the work that Bill McKenzie is doing and the fact he's willing to talk about this today.
As are we.
But until we see actually white privilege being used in the service of addressing white supremacy, you know, these conversations are just going to go round and round. We're not going to see the kind of shifts that Professor Butler's talking about in terms of media culture, in terms of higher education, and also K through 12. You know, I think the whole idea that the caller from Saudi Arabia who talked about what needs to happen in our schools, you know, schools in this country function the same way that South Carolina Confederate flag does, right? The Confederate flag is not just a symbol, obviously, of an American Southern past in South Carolina. It's also a symbol of states' rights, right? And the state of South Carolina saying, this is our right to fly this flag because we said so. Just as the same way they will say, it is our right to define what this curriculum should look like. And we don't even want federal money if we get to define what that curriculum is. And if we decide that we're not going to be totally honest about what American history was, that we're not going to talk about the impact in terms of black folks in this country, then we're not going to teach that history. And you get students at elite institutions like a Harvard or University of Pennsylvania or a Duke who are absolutely ignorant of American history. Right. And so that is on the ground. Right. And until we start to have national leaders, white folks, right, who have true white privilege, understand what that means and uses that white privilege in the service of dealing with anti-black racism, we're just going to continue to go in circles.
Well, I mean, here we are. You call it only talk, but if you don't talk about it, there's not going to be action. And we're trying to talk toward a goal here. We want to make things better. That's why we're here.
Well, can I interject here?
Yep.
Yeah. So when I was at the Dallas Morning News, we had an editorial campaign, which won the Pulitzer for, and that wasn't. And looking at the gaps between the northern and southern halves of Dallas, northern half of Dallas being more affluent and privileged, southern half of Dallas being less privileged, less affluent.
Yep.
And so over the last 7 or 8 years, the paper's still doing it, has had this systematic editorial campaign to identify what the differences are between southern Dallas and northern Dallas and what are some of the solutions economically, socially, culturally, racially. We've had, you know, lots of people into the paper. We've been out in the community to hear, to listen, to identify ways to go forward. And so what happened when our current mayor ran for Mayor Mike Rawlings this last year? He made southern Dallas his top issue. And he is a Anglo Democrat, and so you know there are ways in which you can talk to address the structural racism, the structural corruptions, if you will, that Dr. Butler is talking about. And I think that's one example. I do want people to think, though, there are efforts going on in communities to try to deal with some of these problems, not perfectly, and it's not necessarily going to stop the next Dylann Reed roof. But I don't know what choice we have, but other can keep getting up every day and trying these type of solutions.
Well, I mean, Anthea says, make yourself more uncomfortable. Look at the things that are hard to do, harder and harder to talk about, and maybe that's what this requires. One more call right here, Nicholasville, Kentucky. Anthony, you're on the air, Anthony.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yes, I wanted to make 2 points. The first one being, the Civil War is over. Obviously, however, there are individuals who think it's still going on. And what that flag represents really is equal to ISIS.
Which flag? You're talking the Confederate battle flag on the grounds in South Carolina?
Battle flag, yes. Yeah. If you consider,
equal to ISIS.
Make a parallel with ISIS for one moment. What really happened during the Civil War, that was secession from the Union. That's treason. And you're flying a flag which is treasonous. And if you look at it historically, if someone were to commit an act like that today, they would be put in prison right away. So that's the first part. The second is that there's perceptions that we're dealing with, which are completely wrong, and they're being represented on Fox News. And one of those perceptions, like laziness, people were thought of African Americans as being lazy people, we wouldn't work hard. Historically, if anyone brought 40 million people to another country to do your work to make a country, I think that's the epitome of laziness.
Anthony, our time is so short. Forgive me, Anthony, but I appreciate your call. Anthony, it is interesting, you know, fly the Confederate battle flag, and you can debate it for years. Our caller brings up ISIS. Put out a tweet about ISIS, and the FBI may be at your door in a hurry. I mean, we can get really focused on things when we choose to.
Absolutely. And one of the things I thought was very interesting on Twitter this weekend was somebody put up a picture of Dylann Roof with his Confederate flag and a picture of ISIS and said, I'm more worried about somebody like Dylann Roof living next door to me than I am worried about ISIS coming to America. So I think we really have a problem. And, you know, I'm sure that your listeners today have been listening to the tone of my voice, thinking, gosh, she's just an angry black woman. And I'm not. I'm a hurt black woman. I'm a hurt black woman because the country I live in is being destroyed by people who are just simply not paying attention to the fact that their racism is killing us. And it killed 9 people. And we have to change this. We have to change it.
Is there any reason we can't or won't?
We
shouldn't.
We just are easy. We're living in a world in which nobody has to do anything, but somebody's got to stand up for something. And if my standing up and writing that article helped people to start to think about this, then I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. Education is the key. Civic engagement is the key. Turning away from those people who think that this is just a state's right issue, like Lindsey Graham and Bobby Jindal. Don't let them win the presidency.
We're out of time.
Don't
right
let them
there.
Keep going.
We're on it. We'll stay on it. Anthea Butler, Mark Anthony Neal, Bill McKenzie, thanks to you all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.